Okay, we'll go ahead and get started. My name is Chris Slemp, and I'm from Microsoft IT. I have with me Ethan, who I will allow to introduce in just 10 seconds. Basically, my role at Microsoft and our role here is to present the customer point of view. So we are not Microsoft the product group, but speaking as Microsoft, the customer and consumer of these services. And so my role is basically to manage the Yammer network inside of Microsoft, which happens to be the largest Yammer network in the world at the moment, last I checked. So turn it over to
Ethan.
And
my name is Ethan Goresh, and I'm one of the people on those network. I do actually work in part in the Yammer product group. We'll talk about that later. But for today, my name is Ethan Goresh, and I'm a program manager on one of the first engineering teams in Microsoft to actually adopt Yammer for their day-for-day use.
So I'm going to give kind of an overview of culture and what we mean by culture change and how that's being reflected within Microsoft. And then Ethan has a story about how his particular team and how they went through that change. And then towards the end, I'll come back in with, you know, this is how I think we continue our journey. So as you were hearing this morning, we're going to be talking a lot more about, you'll hear from Microsoft a lot more talk about working like a network, because that is how the world works after all. And yet at work, we're still kind of stuck in that hierarchical mode, right? We still get, you know, questions on one side of the organization, and the answers are found on the other side of the organization, and it's really hard to navigate when we have these hierarchical structures, not a lot of visibility into what's going on. Whereas when we work like a network, when we work like a network, we're better able to listen to the important conversations, and we'll be talking about how we're starting to do some of that listening and the lessons that we can learn from that. And we can adapt, make smarter. There's a lot of promise in how we can adapt and grow. But this is all a journey. Nobody is here. And really, the thing that I wanted to, one of the takeaways I want you to have from this session is that even Microsoft, who saw the value of Yammer and purchased it 2 years ago, is still on this journey and still struggling to make some of these cultural changes. So we're right there with you. So that last slide, let me go back here real quickly. So this is what working like a network enables you to do, but you also need to become something else in many cases in order to take full advantage of that. And so shifting from working like a hierarchy to working like a network is just a foundational piece. There are some other cultural changes that need to happen in order to be more responsive. We need to move from a control environment to an empowerment environment. From looking at people like just numeric customers to thinking of them as a community that we are a part of with them. And Microsoft has actually been doing that last one pretty well for some time. We've made that shift some time ago, and in fact, this session is evidence of that, right? We actually, you know, asked you ahead of time. I posted on our Yammer network for this conference, you know, wanted your input, and I incorporated some of that input into the slides. So that's what working like a community rather than just customers looks like. So we're talking about the Microsoft story here. So what is the Microsoft story with these culture shifts? And I wanted to start with three brief stories that kind of illustrate some of the culture change issues that we face and how deeply ingrained some of these things can be. So the first one, I was training a team on how to make the shift to Yammer and what it was about. And this was a team that sat between some of our OEM manufacturers and product groups within Microsoft. And so as I was doing the training, and this light bulb went on for one guy in the room as he realizes I was talking about, you know, the power of more open communication and connecting people together and faster response times and so forth. The light bulb went on, and he said something to this effect: if my stakeholders and engineers can find and collaborate directly with each other, what's my value? Wow. He saw his value as an employee as essentially a gatekeeper, right? Somebody who got some information, decided who needs to know what information, and passed it on. And he ended up being a gatekeeper and slowing the whole process down. That's not the way he saw it. That's how his value was defined for him by his management. And so we need to, you know, I was talking with them about, you know, moving to a model where you're a connector rather than a gatekeeper. Who here remembers this cartoon? Do you remember this one? This came out several years ago. And it was really funny because it was more or less accurate, right? And so if we zoom in on the Microsoft one, there's some painful truth here. It's a lot better than this. Obviously, all of these are exaggerations to make a point. But I was doing some training not long ago, and one of the leaders in the room that we were training, who shall remain nameless, said something to this effect. That basically, if I'm not confident in who I can, in who's seeing this post, I'm scared to do it. That's what makes me hesitant, because I've seen people, their careers be impacted, right, by oversharing. And so we need to get better about teaching people how to share appropriately, and you know, things in the product can help that, but things in our culture can help make that change too. Email addiction. So this is probably not specific to Microsoft at all. It is, however, a key factor at Microsoft. There are actually 3 times as many distribution lists at Microsoft than there are employees. That's how addicted we are. And yet, at the same time, I don't want to overstate the problems here either. There is a lot of great activity going on in Yammer, and you'll see just how active it was. But there is a real problem here with the fact that I have a tool, I love the tool, I've created, invested all this time and energy into rules that allow me to get my work done over here, and now you're asking me to go over here too. And right now they're 2 separate things. I think you saw this morning how that may change soon, but that's where we are. So where do we go from here? I think a good first step is to realize some of the mistakes that you've made that have landed you where you are, right? And the first of the items on this list is actually not something that you're going to face, but it was important for us to realize it was this unavoidable thing that had a downstream impact. We acquired Yammer. We didn't make a decision to use it internally. We made a decision to acquire this technology to fill a market need and purpose, and had all those reasons. And I think we knew why we were going to use it internally. I mean, we know why we think it's good for our customers. It should be good for us too. But there was no kind of executive meeting where we said, oh, and by the way, let's look in the mirror and say, how are we going to use it? And so there wasn't a framework set up ahead of time. I learned about the acquisition the same time you did. And they said, here, Chris, by the way, you're the admin. Awesome. So we've had to put all these things in place after the fact as we went. We did some really good things too, though. So we moved very quickly with the legal team to set the usage guidelines in place, one of the first things that we did, so that people, and also turned on single sign-on, so that people could feel safe coming in here knowing that only people with corporate credentials could get access to the network. Interestingly, we turned off external network self-provisioning. And you might not know what external networks are, but basically it's a way for us to set up a separate network. It is, for example, the SharePoint conference network that you might be a member of is an external network that we set up. And we can invite internal people in. And this was an interesting case because the Yammer team, the product team, was actually applying a good deal of pressure for us to turn it on, to make it self-provisioning. But we knew the Microsoft culture. And we knew that if we did that, that we would end up with thousands upon thousands of external networks. So people just, part of the Microsoft culture is get out of my way and let me do what I want to do. And so if we had turned it on, we would have had thousands on thousands of dead, empty networks, because that's kind of the way that Microsoft employees work, is turning things on and trying them out and inviting them in. That's nice entrepreneurial, but it doesn't give a good impression of Yammer to come into this dead network. So for that and a variety of other reasons, we turned off the self-provisioning and we set up this governance process or an approval process by which you thoughtfully create your network with executive buy-in and resources that are going to manage that network and so on. So what's going well and why now? I want to spend some time on this to show you kind of the framework of how we're operating right now, and which I think is attributable to some of the success that we have had. So we have two global community managers like myself. So there's myself and a guy named Don who run kind of the rest of this framework. We've got a set of Yammer champions. So this is a program that we set up early on with the guidance from the customer success managers from the Yammer team to start appointing champions all over the globe who were passionate people who could have a brown bag locally in Switzerland to say, hey, this is how we're going to use it as a team. So we did that. We set up a board with representatives from across the divisions and functions of the company to help guide us with our policy reviews and sharing best practices at kind of that executive level for our executive communications managers. And then there were a variety of things that we did as community managers as well. And what that enabled were some pretty big events. We could then staff a kind of global effort called 30 Days of Yammer, which we had last September. It boosted our engagement across the network by 45%, and in a way that it actually stuck. It didn't drop off after September. It actually stayed there. We've had some major events like our recent hiring of a new CEO, which drove on the announcement of the CEO, we had a group set up to discuss that. And the people who were on Satya's team had a plan for how they were going to have him interact there and what they were going to talk about there and so on. And so we drove 27,000 people to interact on Yammer that day, just that day. And then we had, the champions globally can then drive more local events, which we call Yam Jam. So Yam Jam, if you're not familiar with it, is basically a real-time event that happens to take place on Yammer. And so this list here is just a sampling of some of the Yam Jams that have happened in the last 6 months. And so there's sales teams and regional teams, focused on markets and things like that. So all of these things have now add up to about 18,000 people on any given day at Microsoft are engaging on Yammer. So that's certainly not the 400 people on the Yammer team. It's much broader than that. So we feel like we've, in some senses, arrived at a pretty good place, but we know we can do a lot better. So, and we're pretty hopeful because Satya, as you see here, is posting himself and setting a great example. He's posting just about every other day, and that's fantastic, and it's driving a lot of good conversations. Here's an example. I mentioned Yam Jams on the previous slide. I wanted to show what that can do to help drive adoption. So this is a tool I'll mention later in the presentation that we use to kind of analyze the Yammer traffic internally. And it shows that in France, for example, they held a Yam Jam, that's that big yellow spike there, of activity. And then you can see all the other groups that are based in France, their level of activity, it had this halo effect that raised activity going onward. So we saw that those kind of events were a good thing to have. And then integration. So we've started already integrating into our major portals. So this is MSW, which is our main corporate news portal. And this was an opportunity to share in a historic moment here. And so we had a lot of comments put on Yammer from the embedded feed that's right there on this article page. We do the same thing on our video portal, by the way. Our executive blogs are starting to integrate Yammer as well. So where are we at? This is a maturity model that the Yammer talks about, has blogged about publicly, and I think we put Microsoft right about in the middle. We have definitely moved beyond just focusing on getting people to post. We're now focusing on getting people to post productively and in ways that are mirroring business processes and moving some of those business processes to Yammer. And then we're going to focus on value a little bit. We'll talk about that later on. But I want to hand over to Ethan, who's now going to talk about his specific journey. So if I've been talking about the macro level, how Microsoft has been thinking about our culture, the things that we put in place to move that culture forward. But Ethan had some really early and concrete experience in doing that at a team level. So have him tell that story.
Thanks, Chris. So I want to tell you the stories of an early adopter team within Microsoft. So like I said before, and like Chris said, it's important to drive adoption globally. There's so much stuff that executives can do. But my team, I think, is an interesting story that I think might reflect on a lot of you for how does that local adoption happen, which is really critical, and I'll describe why. So first and foremost, a bit of background on my team. So my team is the Yammer North team. We're a team within SharePoint Engineering. And the very first thing I should say, I am not from San Francisco. I'm a 11-year Microsoft veteran. Many people on my team were as well. So we became converts, as we hope many other people do, where we had a culture, like Chris said, of email-centric culture, the classic Microsoft way of working. So we were just as new to this as anyone else. Because our team's charter is to work on integrating Yammer into Office 365, we were, to be fair, more motivated than anyone to start our sort of conversion and start using Yammer. But other than that, I think we're really a typical example. And frankly, a lot of what we went through in learning, I think, would apply to other teams of similar size at any company. So we were about 45 people, give or take, engineers at Microsoft, so programmers, managers like myself, marketing and others. And we started this journey in June 2013. So not too long after the acquisition, but before I think a lot of best practices were even emerging within Microsoft about how to use it. And like I said, why you should care, I hope you come away from this, a lot of really typical examples of how one team locally could start using Yammer if they wanted to, and frankly, why they would want to. So how did we start? First and foremost, we started with an experiment. We had this hypothesis, this belief, and this came out before the terminology that Chris said in the blog post recently about learn, adapt, and grow. We just had this belief, like many customers do, that we could do better on Yammer. If we were working on Yammer, we might be more effective. We didn't quite know what that meant yet. We just sort of had this experiment that we wanted to try. And the way we did it was we ran this experiment that we called No Email Week, which is actually a bit of a misnomer. I'll get to that in a minute. But the idea was, let's move all of our team internal communications to Yammer for 1 week and see how we feel about it. So it was time-boxed. It was not a mandate that said we must do this. It was just something to go off and try. And to get the ball rolling, to get things started, we did require the leadership of our team. So we had three managers, one of whom's in the room, so I'll try to be nice, commit to making one public group for our team. So we had one group called Yammer North, all team. And they committed to, frankly, not a whole lot, but just a few key processes. One, our leadership was already in the habit of sending weekly status updates. You know, we met with our VP, we met with these other teams, here's what we learned, here's what we want you to focus on. That used to be sent to the all-team distribution list. We asked them nicely to post it to the Yammer group. The second thing that actually happens a lot, probably happens in lots of companies, is the whole I brought in donuts phenomenon, or you know, croissants, whatever pastry or delicious thing, or healthy food, vegetables, whatever you're into. We had a lot of that experience with someone to bring something in, post the kitchen, you know, put it in the kitchen, ask people, or tell people, hey, I have extra whatevers to come see. Again, really not a critical team function, but it was one of those other processes, and we again asked the leaders to help post those things there too. And the very last thing that we actually didn't formally ask for, but ended up being really critical, a lot of the leadership on our team got in the habit of just liking posts that they saw and agreed with, which in retrospect I wish we'd asked them to do. I'm so glad it emerged naturally. But that was it, just a few really simple processes. It wasn't about stop using email, you must uninstall Outlook. It wasn't as harsh and dramatic as that. It was just about a few processes. And then the second thing we did, because as an engineering team, we're really a collection of project teams that come together and form to work on a given project, you know, a few engineers sort of thing. We asked each project team to make a public Yammer group for their project. So I have here a few examples of teams that popped up related to our Yammer North team group. And we asked the team to talk about their day-to-day issues there. So a team could come in and ask a question about, you know, internally, hey, I have found a bug. Is this something we know about? Is this something we don't know about? Or I have a question about the design, right? The same kind of communication that had always been going on, we just encouraged people to try it in Yammer. And then lastly, we asked the project team leaders, hey, that weekly status mail that you used to send, can you make that a post in the public group? So just post to the root of the team group saying, you know, for this given project, here's what we did last week, here's what we're doing next week, here's our main issues. So that was a pretty simple structure to get started, and somewhat intentionally so. But there was something else that we needed that, in our case, was really critical. I say, you know, if you think about the positive reinforcement of use Yammer because it's awesome, whenever you're trying to change people's behavior, you need to think about positive and slightly negative reinforcement. And our tool within our team was a little bit of shame. So we made this group called Yammer North Shamers, and the idea was if anyone on the team had sent an email during No Email Week that you think was against the spirit of the rules, you could post here, and you could let the group know that so-and-so didn't do the right thing. And it turns out that we really encourage people. You can shame your boss. You can shame your boss's peers. You can shame anyone without retribution. And it turned out to be really effective. In our team, it turns out that we're friendly, we're competitive, we kind of like making fun of each other to some degree. And so it really worked, and it really galvanized the team around, this is something that we're all in together, and you all be pulling the same direction. And
notice the without retribution piece.
Yes.
I think that was important because back again to the overall Microsoft culture, right, you understood that there might be some fear of that, so you've made that explicit.
Yes, absolutely. We made it something that was really open and for the team to just get into good practice about. There's nothing bad about posting here. And it actually got to the point where people would start self-shaming. As people felt like this is something we're doing as a team, but it's a new habit, people would post on their own. I sent an email, I shouldn't have done it, I should have posted a DM, or I'm sorry. And it turns out, in our team, that's a really powerful vehicle to get people to do the right thing, because it turns out that no one likes the cone of shame in any form. So that was a really powerful tool that we started. It was sort of a funny idea that one of the people on the team had. I cannot stress enough how much it helped. So those were the rules and the parameters of our experiment for No Email Week. And let me tell you about how it went. So first, the good. From the project teams, here's a few paraphrased bits of feedback. But the first one was this notion of my boss's boss liked my post, right? And I can't stress enough how powerful a social gesture the like button is. Because if you think about it as a person on a project team, you got in the habit of sending weekly status mail. You probably asked yourself, does anyone read this? Does anyone care? And it turns out, a bunch of people would read it. And in the past email world, you wouldn't really reply to everyone saying good job on your weekly post. It turns out it's too much inertia. It feels like you're spamming everyone on the team. It's not really much to say. But in Yammer, you can just hit like. And it turns out if you're on a project team, when you post an update and people you didn't know cared about your project, like the senior leadership, are just hitting like, it's an amazingly powerful gesture. It makes you feel really good and it makes you want to keep going. The second thing we heard, questions get answered so much faster. Chris alluded to this before. But this whole idea of, in email, when I send a message out, I'm sending it to a group of people, and maybe the answer's there and maybe it's not, but it's up to me to sort of solicit the right group, doesn't happen in Yammer. That notion of I can just post a message into the ether and people can help route it to someone who knows elsewhere in the company, it's incredibly true. It started benefiting us shockingly early in the process, where someone would just post about, hey, I know our team doesn't own this, but I have a problem with food components. And somehow that person would sort of see that in their own feed in Yammer and answer. And it was an amazingly powerful thing as far as getting people excited. And then lastly, people got excited about how easy it was to get up to speed. Let's do a quick show of hands to see if this compares. Anyone here ever been added to a project midstream? Yep. Anyone ever get added to the mail distribution list for that project when you do? Anyone ever feel like they know what's going on because they got added to the distribution list? Exactly. A Yammer group is not that way. We actually heard from people who got thrown in midstream, I can just go to the group and I can read all of the hard questions people have been asking. There's no good analog for that today. I mean, there's been some tools, Exchange has public folders and other things, but in the Yammer world where everything gets archived, it's just powerful and it works, right? Just like versus replying, saying, I like this. It's not that technology was impossible, but there's some threshold that gets crossed with the experience that just lights this stuff up. So from the team leadership, again, one of them's in the room, so I'll paraphrase in the politest way possible. One of the things I heard was, we feel more informed. As Chris mentioned before, at Microsoft, there's a culture of email overload. And as a result, when people randomly post a status mail and it goes to your inbox and you're the team leader and you're getting 15 of these a week, you're probably not reading them all. There's probably some rule that's actually filtering them out of your inbox. But when you can go to the group and you can cruise them at your own speed and see what's going on, you actually know a lot more. You can read more of the project stuff, which leads to you liking it, which leads to the team getting excited. But it's a really powerful way to be informed. So that was one key thing. Another one, sharing hard decisions help the team level set. So at Microsoft, our classic example is bugs, right? Whenever we build software, it has bugs. No surprise anyone here. But it turns out at all times, we go through these really hard decisions about, for a given bug, should you fix it now? Should you fix it later? Right? We're really excited in Office 365. We can sort of continually ship fixes. But still, prioritizing is hard, and it's sort of an art. And when people joined the team, they had to sort of sit in on a bunch of these meetings to learn how it was done. But we just started posting to Yammer. Here's the decisions that we made. Here's a hard decision. Here's how we made it. And it turns out, the team started reading it, and people started getting a lot smarter. Even junior people on the team seemed to have a really good sense, suddenly, of how to make these decisions. And it's because we were just sharing this knowledge on Yammer. And the last one, people are more willing to ask questions. So even our leadership, when they send weekly status mails, like when my boss does, he rarely gets replies. He certainly doesn't get reply all, right, with questions. Because it turns out that feels, again, like you're spamming the whole group if you ask a question about, hey, this thing that we did last week with this team, I'm curious why we did it that way. But in Yammer, there's something that feels a lot more organic about just replying to the post and saying, hey, I have a question, because it doesn't spam the entire group, and everyone gets to see the reply. So it turns out we get a lot more questions on our weekly status. It helped the team get bought in on questions they had that they probably felt afraid to ask. And one other thing I want to share about the rest of Microsoft. So Chris showed the diagram before with the guns. There is some truth to it. It's cultural things that we're working on. But I did want to point out, there's a big fear at Microsoft, and I suspect in many companies as well, that if you have a social network within your company, all you're going to do is bring out the trolls. If you start talking about what you're doing, some random curmudgeon somewhere in the company is going to come out and explain why it's a bad idea, and their team's doing it better, and you guys are idiots. And that was a fear that we had. But it turns out that people are generally excellent to each other, at least in Microsoft, where there's just a lot more helpful strangers. There's a lot more of those people who are reading through Yammer, who aren't on your team, who know something, who will respond helpfully with an answer than people will come back and say something negative. I'm not going to say there's no trolls, especially in a company as big as Microsoft, but the perception of sort of the helpful stranger to troll ratio is way off. Helpful strangers are way, way more numerous. All right, so I've told you the good. So let's be honest about the sad panda type problems. What was the negatives? First one, I mentioned that no email week's a bit of a misnomer. I'm sure, just like at many of your companies as well, you have both sort of your own local teams that you communicate with a lot and a lot of other peripheral teams that you work with too. And so for us, we ended up with a bit of this two-inbox problem, where during the day you had to boot Outlook, just like you always had, and if there was mail from other teams, you'd have to respond to it there, because not everyone is going to sort of have made the jump to Yammer yet, although it's getting better, more people are coming along. And it is annoying that you end up finding ways to deal with that. I will say, though, we thought it would be a deal breaker. We thought this would be the thing that would kill no email week, and everyone would say, this problem is so bad, I can't handle it. Turns out it was sort of in the annoying, but you get used to it state. You end up just learning in the morning that you boot your web browser to Yammer, leave it open, boot Outlook, leave it open, keep doing what you're doing during your day. Not great. As someone on the Yammer product team, I aspire to make this better, but it wasn't a deal breaker we thought it was. The other ones, meetings. So in Yammer, there is no real notion for scheduling a meeting. You still have to go to Outlook anytime you wanted to meet. It's a little bit of having too many tools and switching back and forth, but that's one that you still have to switch. And there's one other interesting skill that people, at least on our team, forgot as we moved tools. So Outlook, I believe 2013, added this great feature where if there's an email conversation and you've noticed it's going on for too long and people should just get in a room and talk about it because nothing's going to get answered with emails going back and forth, you can reply with a meeting. It's a great idea. I use this all the time. And it turns out that when people made the jump to Yammer, even really smart people in Microsoft, people sort of forgot this skill that's just, I could respond to this post in Yammer, but that's probably not the best way to solve the problem. I should schedule a meeting. We had to actually sort of remind people of that skill that we all have. And we ended up sort of making rules, like if a thread goes on for more than X length, someone just gets to call a meeting. So again, as a product guy, I aspire to make this better one day, but it's the reality of where we're at. It's an important thing we learned. A couple other things to observe. So my second sad panda slide. Long form or rich text content. So one thing that we have still, where we have a proliferation of tools that we need, that I aspire for us to make better in the product, is it's really tempting for us to say, oh, well, we're using Yammer this week. Let's try to do everything in Yammer. Let's try to use Yammer notes and not Word documents, for example. And it turns out that that's a little bit of a stretch of what a lot of those features are for. There's a lot of times when you'll want to write a document, you might need tables or rich formatting. And so we jumped a little, I'd say, too far into trying to use Yammer for everything. It's useful to think about how do documents fit in. And related to that, my second point around just where do you put your documents. Today, in Yammer, the experience is actually better than what we did about a year ago. It turns out a bunch of what was in the blog post that Jared did today about how much better it is with documents and Yammer together are actually improvements that our team made in response to what we learned during this week. But there's still a bit of question today around, should I put my document in SharePoint? Should I put my document in Yammer? Should I put it in SharePoint and sort of post a link? It's still a decision people have to make, and it's something that I'd say we eventually just developed sort of habits around what you do. We sort of defaulted to you generally post it in SharePoint and put a link in Yammer. But it's a behavior that you had to teach people because the product gives you too much choice. And so that's something that's still a challenge. And then the last one, there's a few things about email that we did kind of miss that were a little bit surprising. One of them is just the notion of a subject line, this idea that if you're going to write a really long post, how do you tell someone what it's about before they start reading it? And so we ended up just adopting convention around, if you're going to write something really long, write a first sentence or line, and then write what you're going to say. But again, not a fully natural behavior you had to evolve. And the other one that might not be universal at other companies, but at least at Microsoft, where we're so email addicted, there's sort of this weird social norm that evolves around if you're on the to line versus the CC line, that means something, where CC generally meant read this when you want, but I don't need anything from you, whereas to meant you need to do something when you see this. Yammer doesn't quite have that. There's one way of notifying people, right? And it's not clear, as we've thought about it as a product team, do we want to put back this feature of email into Yammer? Is it useful or is it just too much complexity? But as someone coming from email moving to Yammer, we missed it because it's something we were used to. All right. Now, observations about the rest of Microsoft. For one thing, Chris alluded to this, but I'll reinforce it. There's always a bit of hesitation and nervousness about, can I do stuff in public? Even the best-intentioned people, right, who don't think their job is taking information from the customers, the engineers, or the engineers, the other engineers, there's still some confusion about, should I say this in public? If I have a question and I ask it in public, are people going to laugh at what I don't know? And it turns out it's much more perception than reality, but it's a perception and it's real and something that we have to think about. And the other one that came up a lot, especially to companies as large as Microsoft, is when do you use groups versus when do you just post to all company, right, or the home feed, right? This whole idea of it's great to shout something out into the ether to the entire company at once. And it turns out at a company as large as Microsoft, that's almost never the right thing to do. It's probably the right thing if you're someone like Satya, our new CEO, but rarely the right thing for me. And again, I don't think the product helps people make that distinction, right? So I often see a lot of things in all company that I really think someone posted and they meant it for the five people they work with, but instead they sent it to everyone, myself included. So something to work on. So how did the experiment actually go? I guess this is the final good news. No one on the team after no email week, which involved sending a bit of email, actually wanted to go back to emails the main way to communicate. And this is a huge success. Admittedly, it's the result we wanted to see because it validated the billion or 1.2 billion we spent on Yammer. But it was great to see even our own experience, even as we saw a lot of the potential of the product, let's say, around how much more integrated it could be. A bunch of our team decided, yes, this is a better way to work. And then the next thing that happens, and the reason I'm sort of here today talking to you guys, is a lot of other teams around Microsoft got really excited and started saying, how do I do what your team just did? I love that it's not just a few people on your team that did it, but your whole team has jumped into the deep end of the pool. Teach me how to jump or swim. And so that was great. So to that end, let me give you sort of the cheat sheet, the if I had to do this again, what I'd want to know about how to be successful in getting a team to adopt Yammer in this way. So first and foremost, you need some champions. In our case, the first thing we did, getting our leadership to buy in on what they were going to do on Yammer, not just they commit to having the team use Yammer, helped a lot because it created the beginning of the snowball, let's say, for people to work with. Secondly, people need advice for how to get started. It turns out that a lot of the challenge we get with Yammer, the single biggest thing I hear, and I hear it from throughout the company and people message me about how to make Yammer better, is the, okay, I drank the Kool-Aid, I believe, I came to Yammer, I'm here, what do I do? And so it turns out, having a bit of advice of what to do, in our case it was we made the project leads commit to something, we made the leadership commit to something, not a lot, but a little, helped us get over that sort of blank sheet of paper problem, right? Just getting it started. And again, one thing I would change, I wouldn't have framed it as no email week, right? People have this false dichotomy problem of, if I'm using Yammer, that means I'm not using email, and there's things I like about email, so what does that mean? Don't frame it for people that way. We still use email, I still use email. I'm not embarrassed to say that. It's a valid tool for a lot of scenarios, and so that's okay. And second thing that I'd mention too, I mentioned how important the clean sheet of paper problem is. And even to that end, even if you're not sure what advice to give your team about how to get started, bad advice is actually better than no advice. Just getting people started, getting them the tool, they will find out what works for them. There's a lot of stuff in there that once you start working like a network, you will get hooked. And so if you're not confident, should I have the team make one group? Should I have them make two groups? Should I have them make five groups? I would say just start with something. Take your best guess and start. The great thing about working like a network is the network will evolve. So help people get in and help them get started. Having said that, I would have a plan to show some quick wins. You will face people who are skeptical. And it's important to think about what is going to happen in that first week that's going to get everyone excited, right? So in our case, things that we knew our leaders could do to help out. One, it turns out that the longer you've been at Microsoft, the more people you know. So that whole experience of getting helpful strangers to answer. If you have a few people who commit to participate, and they're able to sort of mention people when a question comes up, and they know who might know the answer, right? That helps build that quick win of, oh my god, people are actually answering me from outside my team. Similarly, leaders liking posts and making individuals feel read, right? It's a great behavior that once you start it organically, you cannot stop, right? You get so much good feedback about it that you'll keep doing it, but we started that. We had this idea of what was going to make people start to get excited. And the last one, I would say, again, positive and negative reinforcement. Behavior change is hard, and I don't mean threaten to fire someone over it, and I don't mean retribution, right? But this idea about if I'm getting you to change a behavior that you've learned for 20 years, right? The whole notion of I have a question, I'm going to go to Outlook and hit new email or whatever app, or you know that mail app on your phone, whatever you use. It is a deeply ingrained behavior. So decide how you're not just going to tell people what to do, but encourage them. Whether that's the shamers group like we did, if you think that'll work in your company, whether it's thinking of a reward system, if you're going to look at who you know, installing like the leaderboard app from Yammer and seeing who's actually posting the most and who's the most liked. Have a plan for how you're going to encourage people, not just tell them what to do, but help them do the right thing. And I think if you do those things, a lot of teams, non-engineering teams, non-Microsoft teams, can have a lot of the success that we had. So that's our template from what we learned. With that, I'm going to hand it back over to Chris.
Right. Thanks so much, Ethan. We saw what they were doing, obviously, very early on a year ago. And you know, just like he was saying, show some quick wins. Their team was actually one of the quick wins that we then turned around and showed to the rest of the network to show how things were done and took some lessons from what they were doing. And again, in an effort to kind of continue to move us down this this value chain from just focusing on adoption to now how are people engaging and what's the quality of the engagement. And now going forward, we need to look at how we actually demonstrate some business value. So how do we do that? How do we get there? I think I'm going to go back again to, we have to examine again who we are, understand where our weaknesses and strengths are, and build from that, and learn from the past. So, so we need to decide who we are, first of all. So this is a framework that was, and my one screen hid the reference, Mark Feitelman, Socialized. Book called Socialized. It talks about these different, has this framework of different cultures for companies and how well they map to or how easily a company of that type of culture can adopt social. Obviously some more than others. So if you're over to the left, if you're a more innovative company and believe things like we create, we delight our customers, that's our core value proposition. Then becoming a social company where that's your core value is going to be much easier than, hey, we're a command and control company and we got to worry about compliance and budget and time and those kinds of things. Those kinds of cultures just lend themselves better. The challenge at Microsoft is that you can hear, so you see those mission statements at the bottom of those boxes there, we hear all four of those things all the time. So we're trying to be all those things. And I think it's unrealistic that any company would actually just be one of these things. But understanding who you are can help at least set your expectations of how long this journey is going to take you. The good news for us as Microsoft is I took a look at, I studied that memo that came out from Steve Ballmer, went out publicly into the news, about our large reorganization that we embarked on about 7 or 8 months ago. And I looked at those values that he talked about in there, about how we're going to represent our values in new ways of working. And I read through those, and I just started jumping up and down because I realized how closely it all maps to moving to a more social business and working more like a network. So, for example, nimble. If we're going to solve problems quickly with real-time data, if most of that good data is locked up in conversations that are sitting in people's inboxes, where only the people on the two line have that information, how are you going to make those decisions? communication. I have not seen anything like working social that drives more agility and accountability. So for example, Ethan was talking about product decisions, right? Design decisions and test decisions. How are we going to solve this bug? When they're making those statements in a public forum, they feel more accountable for them and are more accountable. People can come and find that conversation and say, hey, you said X. And so on. So I could go through all of these and talk about how the mission of our company ties directly to social and the need to move to social. So what I encourage you to do is look at your company mission statements and find out, well, what is that alignment for you, right? So then given that framework, what do we need now as a company? So now I look at the company culture, I look at where we're sitting right now, some of the key barriers that we've had both from a cultural and a technical standpoint, and say, what do we need going forward? Integration, integration, integration. So, and I mean that in two senses. One is, yes, the products need to integrate. Product to product need to integrate. And I think we saw some great signs of that in the keynote this morning, right? These things are becoming more mature and more integrated. My manager, who's sitting right in the middle of the room, likes to say that if 3 years from now you care anything about whether you're using Exchange or Yammer, then we'll have failed, right? You shouldn't know or care. You're just communicating. It's just seamless. And the same can be said of our processes and tools that we use. So I shouldn't have to be in my CRM application or my invoice approval application and worry about how I should be interacting or having conversations. Those should just be a natural part of the flow. Whether it's embedded in the experience or just easy to start a conversation or whatever, that might depend on the application, but the point is that the flow shouldn't be broken. It should just be seamless. And so we need to work on the processes and tools as well as between the products. And then secondly, analytics. So you've heard talk and you saw in big giant words behind Jeff Tepper this morning, social and cloud and big data was one of them, right? And so if we pull all these things together, how can we take all the advances that we're making in big data and put that together with the value that we're getting from social? What does that give us? And I'll walk you through an example there, because I think what that does is start to illustrate to our management teams and those who are making business decisions the value of working like a network. So let me walk you through a couple of stories to see how I think this can play out. So we started with a very organic growth, right? So as I was saying up front, we had no kind of framework coming in from the top to say, this is how we're going to use Yammer. And so what then ended up happening is that organic growth ended up just looking confusing and chaotic to our management, okay? They didn't understand what was really going on here. And so while we want to move from operating like a hierarchy, we want to work like a network, I think it's still important that we can snap to that, right? We can take that network and at least tie it to that framework so that management understands, oh, these groups are for this business process, I get it. And these groups are going to be for our organization, or how our organization is going to move forward and deliver on this business value. So I'm not saying become a hierarchy, I'm saying map the two so that management understands. Let me walk you through how this might work. So this is a story from he's an account tech strategist in our central region, and he pointed out a particular success story, or what we like to call a YAM win, where, and Eric, by the way, is one of our champions, so he's in the central region, and he's helping to drive the adoption of Yammer and his team. And the story here is that they moved they have a particular customer, and they moved that whole account team onto Yammer. All of their conversations are happening in Yammer. So this is a cross-functional team. And what happened was an issue came up with a customer. It was actually a long-standing issue, but it had reached kind of a critical point. Somebody, I can't remember Tom's specific role, but he raised the issue and articulated it. Within a day, they got all the right people on the thread. The following day, they have a customer call with a customer and resolve the issue the next day. And the account actually came back to the team after it was all resolved and said, how on earth did you get the right people in the right place at the right time so quickly to get to resolution on this? And universally, the team came back to them and said, Yammer, we are now getting all eyes on this situation, and we're able to move much more quickly. So now take that story and replicate that hundreds of times in a week across the globe, and we can start to see some interesting patterns. And if we apply then data analysis to this, we can make some interesting business, get some interesting business insights. So this is, by the way, these are screenshots from a tool that we have internally that we use to analyze our Yammer traffic. There are some partners like Good Data and ViewDo as a couple examples that can enable you to do similar kinds of things. So this, for example, is our Yammer network data filtered to a particular country, in this case, the Netherlands. And so I can then identify the people who are the most influential. So this is just going by the number of posts, but we could apply some other algorithm here too. We're looking at this particular one we think is interesting. How do we find the influential people in this region? Okay? So now we take those influential people, and now I filter on those to find out what are the groups and conversations that these people are engaged in. Okay, where are these people living and working day to day? Now I take those groups and filter by those groups, and then further filter by, I want to see just the threads that are really meaty, the threads that have lasted more than just one or two days. Okay? So now we're seeing the topics. So this is now a view of the topics that are being discussed in those conversations. And these are the topics that are being discussed by my influential people in my region. Interesting. Now I look at these topics and I say, okay, Office 365, it's not getting talked about as much as some of these other things. Our strategy is to drive more Office 365 deployments. What's going on here? Is there something happening in the market? Or are we just off strategy? What do we do? And so maybe I can reach out to those influencers, by the way, and say that I've already identified as driving a lot of these meaty conversations and saying, hey, what's going on? What are you hearing in the market? How can we shift the conversation? Or do we need to? Do we need to shift our strategy? So those are kinds of business analytics that I think can come out of working like a network. We can actually apply some big data principles to these things to derive some value that we haven't before. Okay. These are my daughters, so I just got to pause for a minute and take them in. So they, I was thinking about how to close on something of a metaphor. I watched Gravity over the weekend. Nothing came up there, and thought, what kind of represents where I think we are, both as a company and I think as an industry. And I thought of my daughters. This is them singing their guts out with all their gusto. And you know, I'm their dad, so I think they sing pretty good. But they are teenagers, and teenagers by their nature are kind of fumbling through some things, right? They're trying things out and you know, banging up against borders and walls and things and doing some things wrong and getting a few things right. And I think that's where we are, both as Microsoft and just with social business generally. I think we're really just at the beginning edge of this. And if we understand where we are and understand who we are as a culture and a company, then we can build on the strengths and see our weaknesses and move it forward. And I think you saw again from this morning how the tools themselves are maturing to the point where our use of them can also mature, and we can be singing more like professionals rather than teenagers perhaps. Although I love their gusto. All right, so to wrap up, and we will have time for Q&A, which was our design, right, Ethan? So yep. We will have some time for Q&A. Basically, understand the culture, that your context, in order to better change it. Understand what are the likely barriers you're going to need to overcome. It will differ from company to company, but there's usually a solution. So just understand it. Don't launch without sponsorship. That was probably, if I could nail it down, one of our biggest mistakes. Again, slightly unavoidable just because of the way we acquired Yammer in our case, but I think led to a lot of confusion and catch-up work for us. But as Ethan was demonstrating, do something, right? Launch, do something, experiment, and learn from it. And then really focus on those champions to empower and to empower people and move from kind of a control situation to an empowerment situation. Help them to understand that they can experiment and get out there and scale out your ability to change as well. And then finally, integrate and expose business insights for, you know, especially those teams that are going to be that you need their sponsorship from to really affect change management. So lastly, you can come and talk with me. I'm going to be, ViewDo is one of those vendors I mentioned. They just happened to invite me to a Birds of a Feather session about this topic as well, so I thought I would pitch that. It's 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. It's at, sorry, I didn't have the location when I had to finalize the slides. It is at, sorry, Bouchon Bistro, tomorrow. Nope. Lied. ViewDo Lounge, which is what? All right. Find me on the network. Find me on the Amber network, because I will find out exactly where it is and can let you know. So find me on the SharePoint Conference Network, okay? Mm-hmm. I think we got other sessions we're supposed to show you that you can go to. Just look at the social track, which I think we're in. There's a lot of goodness happening.
Yep. And one quick plug, by the way, for both the product booth at the Pavilion and Ask the Experts on Wednesday evening. I'm going to be there. A bunch of my team's going to be there. So you can come. You can bring your hardest questions. But we really are there. My team loves staffing it. We love hearing from people, both good, bad, what they want out of the product. So please do check that one out. Awesome. Among the many things you could do.
Awesome. Yes. You can't read this, but you can read it afterwards. Then lastly, of course, do your evaluations. So, and you know, feel free to use whatever score you would like. Don't be biased by anything at all. So.
Yes, and I will personally admit, it was really empowering as a SharePoint conference speaker of actually, I think this is my fourth or fifth conference. It was incredibly cool over Yammer to get input from people as to what they wanted the session.
Yeah.
Actually, one thing we didn't do, quick show of hands before everyone leaves. Who actually gave us a suggestion for the session
did
on the Yammer
show
group
up?
At some point?
Look at that. Look at that. They provided all this input and then
didn't
need
to show up.
To see.
All right. Well, I was going to thank all of you, but screw you guys. honestly, it was great to get the feedback. I hope for all of you who are actually here, it does even lead to a session that got you more of what you want. Because like I said, for us, that was one of those great moments. And I look forward to hearing your feedback about if you got what you wanted or you didn't.
Absolutely. So questions. There's a mic here. If you don't want to make the trek, we'll repeat the question for you if you're over there. But happy to take questions. Yes, the back here. Could you possibly use the mic? You're over there. Now that I've forced you to do it, nobody else is going to ask a question.
Do you do badging currently in your systems?
Badging.
Yeah.
Interesting. So Yammer has a function called praise, which is being used in pockets. The interesting thing there with Microsoft is that we've had this internal tool called Kudos, which has actually gotten some headway as well, and so people were a little confused about, do I use praise in Yammer versus this Kudos thing? I don't know. So we need to sort through that and make maybe some more formal suggestions around that. So there is that function there. I would say we haven't put a lot of fire behind it, but we've seen. We certainly encourage our executives to do it. That's one of the things that we're encouraging them to do. But
one other plug actually too. There's an app in the Yammer App Store called Leaderboard, which you can install, and it'll actually let you see who's the most popular, most posting, most liked. So it doesn't have to fully integrated to reward those people in some way, but if you wanted for your deployment to figure out how to reward people, it gives you a bunch of the data with which to do it.
Yeah.
Leaderboard,
yeah. You can just go turn it on for your network, and then you'll get something to get started with. We find that when your network gets really big, that leaderboard kind of loses some of its value, but it's a great place to start.
And selfishly for my team, there's a while in June and July when we were the top of all the leaderboards.
Yeah, there you go.
Less so now to company Microsoft size, but again, as you think through where you're at in your adoption, it can be a great tool for you.
That's right. Other questions?
Anyone else?
At the back. Wow, that's a big question.
Yeah, can you repeat it, by the way, for yeah, reasons
sorry.
Of fans of
yeah,
the video?
Thank you. Selling executives on the value of social. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's becoming clearer with this shift in emphasis that you saw at the very beginning of the slide deck, where it's kind of, you know, listen and adapt and grow. I think those hit more solidly with where executives live. So, what I see, you know, it's interesting. I get more requests for the analytics that I was showing you from executive communications managers and people in that kind of a role than just about anywhere, which is interesting. And people, they're interested in finding out whether their messages are landing. And they've had much less insight through their email blasts than they can now have with Yammer. So those that see and understand that are interested. You know, I think one of the things, again, if I were to do it differently at Microsoft, if I'd had the option to roll Yammer out to, say, a region or a product division or something like that, and demonstrate some success with an early adopter that was really passionate about it, then taking that story and telling that around the rest of the organization would be a great way to sell it to, you know, other executives there. So you do have to start with a champion. You got to have somebody who you know, at least one person who gets it, understands it, and is willing to experiment and try some things out. But then you can tell that story elsewhere.
Yes, over here.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's a great question. I'll repeat it. And so the question is, given how much of the communication is visual as opposed to verbal, are we doing anything in the product to make that easier? So there's actually a bunch over the last few months of things that we have done. We've tried to experiment and add a bunch of features around posting photos, for example, because a common usage we saw in Microsoft was a bunch of us met, here's a picture of the whiteboard when we left the room, is a great example of that. So we've done work around if you post multiple photos, you get a bit of a gallery view around them. We did work. Ironically, one thing we saw at Yammer, this might be a little too nerdy and might not generalize, but there was a lot of the use of internet memes with animated GIFs as like the way to post, hey, this was really stupid, this was really funny. So we did a lot of stuff to support that in the product and mobile apps. We've done also a lot of work even on phones around in our native apps for integrating with the camera function, so it's really easy to capture information like that. So there's a bunch that we've done there. The other things that we've done around communications that are slightly more visual is that within the Office files, we're also doing a bunch of work that was talked about in the keynote around integration with the WAC, so you could have a PowerPoint integrate playing better with the Yammer post than you can today. So we've taken a lot of steps in that direction. There's certainly a ton more that we can do. And if you have specific ideas, we'd love to know and hear that feedback. But it's something we keep working on, and there's lots more we'll do.
I actually have a really interesting example to that point. We have there was a guy in a training division in Microsoft who is a really creative thinker. And he created a group called, I think it was called Photo Tips. And what he started doing was posting just like a tip of the day with an attached photo. And then he realized, Yammer embeds video. So now he started recording these video things in his posts, right? And so people could get their, and then he realized, it supports animated GIFs. And so, you know, you're making a joke about the memes that people were posting about, you know, with these animated GIFs, and that's kind of fun, but he actually really took it in a productive way and created animated GIFs of little tips and processes that people could learn just as they're scrolling their feed. They would see this animated GIF of, that's how I, you know, create a meeting out of an email thread, for example, right? Just really simple little tips in that. So, yeah, there's some creative things that can be done already today. I think I'm going to come up here. Yes.
Or do they just speak?
Okay, so let me see if I can rephrase it to see if I understand it correctly. So, and for the audio. So, do our Yammer champions, are they acting in a more reactive or a proactive mode? Is that kind of what you're getting at? Are they tier one support?
Yammer, do you understand, like, you know, the difference between a regular new user and a power user?
Yeah. So, Right. So yes and no. So our Yammer champions do a couple of different things. We have a group on Yammer, and I guess it's a fairly common practice amongst amongst adopters that we call Yammer 101, right? Where you can just, anybody can go and feel free to ask a question. And for a while there, it was just me answering questions there and some nice volunteers from our Yammer folks. But now our Yammer champions are answering most of the questions in that group. So that's great. But then what we encourage them to do is actually as much as they can of the other, which is much more personalized, like a brown bag for this team to say, you know, okay, in this team, we're going to use it like Ethan's model, right? Just to say, you know, these are the three tasks that we're going to, processes that we're going to move to Yammer, and this is why, and this is how.
So they're actually, you're relying on them to do the brown bags, to do that community education.
We almost have to. I mean, I can't, this is a global company of 100,000 people. I can't, you know, travel that much. And so that's, yeah, that's how we scale it out.
Yeah, and the other thing I'll say, not to diminish in any way my love for Chris and Microsoft IT, I have a ton of that. But there is something more impactful around someone in the team has decided we can do something better with the credibility that comes with being in the team, as opposed to someone from Microsoft IT saying, please go try this, right? And so a lot of that, to go back to the earlier question about how do you get the ball rolling with executives, you could generalize that elsewhere, which I would argue you cannot make people start using Yammer. You can try. You can say, you should use Yammer, and nothing will happen. Or maybe you'll get lucky and a few people will start. There has to be some more clarity around what is it that we want to do? What problem am I trying to solve? What job do I have to be done that I think could be done better? And at some point, I'm sure it depends on the company culture, there's a certain amount of that that must be local, that has to come from within the people you want, and that's why you need a champion. Like, Chris lacks the credibility in some way to tell me how to do my job better. He can tell me about all the tools, and he can help with a ton of those things. But at the end of the day, my team trusts me to make some of those calls, and so you have to rely on being local. The good news is, I think as the word spreads and these examples keep spreading about teams that have been better in all these ways everyone wants to be better about working through Yammer, right? That story that Chris mentioned, another one that comes up a lot is there's a story that a customer called Microsoft and they dialed a Microsoft corporate number and they dialed a random extension and they got this woman in the car about,
awesome
my
story.
Xbox is dead, what do? I called support, they're not helping me, and she actually went and posted on Yammer, I have a customer, they're really mad, this seems like we've really done the wrong thing and not having better support, what do we do? And it routed around to the point where it got an answer. And I think within a lot of teams like mine at Microsoft, that carried a lot of weight of here is something we can do better. And so I would say that some of it's got to be local. And the reason is not just to challenge them at SIT, but it's got to be locally about, I think that if my team does this, we will be better at something we're already being judged on. Because at the end of the day, that's why people change. They don't change because they want to change. They change because they feel they'll get rewarded more in the new way than the old way.
Come to you. So the question was around data retention, actually there's a great answer to that. Adam Pisoni, one of the founders of Yammer, talks about this concept of the half-life of information, right? And that the more that we the more rapidly that we are changing in our environment, the faster that half-life of information, or the value of information, drops, right? And so while, yes, it's good, and one of the core value propositions of Yammer to have content that I can refer to later, the value of content from a year ago or even 6 months ago is much, much lower than content from last week. And so while we don't have policies around, you know, we're going to kill everything that's older than a year at the moment. We do believe that, you know, being able to, you know, cut that off at some point in time, about a year or so out, isn't going to cut the value of the platform. Because most of the value is going to be in the content from the last couple of months. You were next. Sorry. Ouch.
Wow. Can we try this one?
Go for it.
Yeah. All right. I have to do this first and apologize. Of course, the answer is everyone should be using Yammer.
Yeah.
Having said that, the recording has heard that. That's what I said. Now let me give you the more nuanced and balanced answer. So I would argue that in all honesty, if you think about those messages from the keynote, right, around it's about having the company as a network, it's about thinking about the graph and how things connect, it's true that if you have multiple different graphs in your company, which is in effect the result of multiple different social networks, there is some connectivity you will lose, right?
Right.
If sales is off using Chatter, but engineering or R&D is off using Yammer, a lot of my stories around someone asks a random question in one thread and it might make it to someone over in sales to answer might not happen, right? Now there's you have to jump networks. And so there is, I think, some benefit that you'll be missing there. Having said that, I think it depends on the nature of each company, and frankly, yep. the feature set and how well people do. I'm not going to say here with a straight face, you know, we're a better NewsGator in every way. I can't say that, right? I think there's lots of stories about who does what in their products. So I'd say you've got to choose what's working for you. I do think in the long term there's benefits on consolidating. I think the benefits will be around just the sharing of information and sort of these walls you're creating between networks that you want to bring down. And then the other thing I'll say is the Yammer product guy. I think between hopefully the things we've seen in the keynote and the blog post about how we're trying to bring Office 365 and Yammer and sort of things like Codename Oslo together to bring these amazing experiences to help companies work like a network. I don't know of anything other than the combination of Yammer and 365 that's going to be able to go as deep as we aspire to go. So if you're asking me based on the roadmap where you'd go, that's my biased answer. And in the short term of how fast should you move, right? I think that's a function of just what you need, how fast it is. And as far as how to migrate, that's really hard. That's the best answer I can give you today, and I'll try to be honest about it.
A concrete example around there. So I was talking with a major bank on Friday, and they were saying, you know, we have basically two big halves of the company. We've got back office and front office, right? And if those two halves of the company talk too much to each other, there's actually legal and compliance danger that we can get into, right? And so so we talked with them about, you know, maybe the place to pilot social is in this space, but you could effectively, as I think Deloitte, I want to say, has, whether it's a good idea or not, but one of these consulting firms, I can't remember if I got the right one there, has multiple networks. And they started that way for a reason. They're not sure whether that's the way to go forward, but I'm saying that there are examples out there of people who have had to create different networks for legal reasons. I think especially having them all on the same platform could certainly help with mobility between and not relearning a new way of working and those kinds of things too.
Yeah, oh, and one other thing I'll just add really quick to that question. Another thing that we alluded to before, or my statement of it's hard, but why it's actually not as bad as a lot of people think, though there's a perception challenge, the whole half-life of information thing is really powerful and subtle, right? There is this notion that if I move my people off one network to another, they're probably constantly going back to six months old conversations, and they won't have those, and that's a real problem. And I think from a lot of customers we've talked to in similar spots who've decided to sort of bite the bullet and move everyone onto one network, it's not actually that necessary. It's true that for some period of time they go back and look at old stuff, but it's not, a lot of that stuff just doesn't have as much durable permanent value. So while it is hard, the whole, oh my God, I will need federated search to search both networks for a long time, it just doesn't tend to play out in reality, although the perception is a real thing to combat, and I don't have a good answer of how to change people's minds other than trying it and seeing other customers' experience. Yes?
The person best qualified to answer that question is sitting on the front row, but I'm going to take a shot at it, and she can jump in. So what I would say is, and it's interesting because we were just talking, I was just talking with another customer who's going through that same transition, essentially. And you know, what we told them is basically you need to make sure that your employees understand that think of the that existing Yammer network as essentially a Facebook group or a, right? I mean, only certain people can access it at first, but then because you don't have, you know, Active Directory sync and single sign-on turned on because it's not a paid network, you don't know who's, effectively, you don't know who's in there, right? Who's in there now. And so treat it that way, but pay attention to what's going on there because your, you know, your employees are demonstrating a real need. And so then evaluate the move to enterprise because that gives you the security that you want. And you can put some guidelines in place. So I said very early in the deck, that was one of the first things we did, was said, here's our guidelines. This is what can be shared in a private public group, and this is what should be shared in a private group. And so people were very clear about, well, clear as we could make it, about where people should post what. That help? Okay. You've been waiting a long time over here.
So our company isn't using Office 365 yet, we're willing to. We're probably going to go with Yammer. But is there any value in the newsfeed? Is that going to be SharePoint?
The SharePoint newsfeed?
Yes.
Is there any value in it? So.
Sure. Can I take this one?
You can. Let me nuance it with an opinion,
sure.
First off, because I was actually deeply embedded with the product group and the design of that. I actually love the SharePoint news feed as it exists. I think as we heard this morning, it's not going to get further investment. So, you know, if you have a real need, I hope this is what you were going to say, if you have a real need for an on-premise solution, that's, you know, that's a solution that's there. But let me let you follow on with that.
Yep, no, I would largely agree. I think it's a great set of features that we built. It's a great capability of the product. In all candor, we built it before we acquired Yammer. We think much more deeply about the graph and the potential it has. And so I would say that for a customer today, again, if you need something on-prem, right, or on-premises, I should say, it exists, it's there. But I would say in general, there's very few customers I'd ever talk to who I'd say if you're evaluating those two, pick the SharePoint newsfeed. We will figure out a plan to help all customers transition to Yammer eventually once we address more of those concerns. But I think for those set of customers who can make the choice for Yammer today, you will have much less of a migration challenge in the future, and we hope to get everyone there as quickly as possible.
All right. In the back there. So that is one of the roles that's one of the roles that our champions play from time to time, and I was doing a lot of early on before we had a lot of champions, was kind of doing some gentle nudging and saying, hey, you know, there's a really great group for that, and I'll share this question over to that group for you. And you do enough of that modeling in public and people start to get it. So there was actually a stat I was going to quote earlier. We were talking about the shift from, you know, posting in all company versus posting and working in groups. What we found is that the amount of traffic in our all-company group has dropped dramatically. It's down to like 3% now, so or below. And so, you know, that's a sign to me that people are starting to understand that concept that I need to pick a group.
Yeah, but to go to Chris's point, I just build on it. Again, I think it's where helping set the model of what people should be doing, hopefully in a way that makes the payoff clear, right? Like I, for example, as an engineer on the product team who knows a lot about certain areas of the product, I don't go to all company very often. So it's not a matter of going to all company is wrong and I want to teach you not to do it. It's a matter of if you want to find me in the groups I'm checking regularly, here is where you should go. Mm-hmm. And so I think a bit of positive reinforcement helps, and just I think being clear about it's not about you did the wrong thing. It's about if you have certain goals that you do have, here's the best way to do what you're doing. And that message tends to resonate really clearly with people in this space.
We're actually 2 minutes over. But,
are we?
Yeah, we are.
Oh.
So I'd be happy to take your questions afterwards, but they probably need to wrap the recording right now. And happy to talk with you after, and there's a breakfast tomorrow morning, and you can find me on the network if you want to know where that is, because I don't even know where it is right now. So, okay, thank you very much for coming.
Thanks. Also, if anyone wants to, you know, miss a few minutes of Club SPC and ask questions, I can hang around for another 15, 20 minutes too.